Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we take a look at the evolution of the GPU from the software side, from OpenGL to DirectX. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. Last month in the main show, we talked about the evolution of the graphics card and why it is so important in the performance of computers today.
Absolutely. And it's become really the key component for performance and overclocking.
Yeah, especially with DirectX 12 and the fact that the GPU or the graphics processing unit is really taking over everything, including crypto mining and data center, and also how fast we can play Metro Exodus, for instance.
And the prices are showing that evolution, unfortunately.
Yeah, they seem to go up in price a lot. I mean, in that last episode, I talked about my GeForce 2 Ultra that I purchased and then got duped into buying a GeForce 3. And the only thing that really pissed me off was the fact that I paid almost $600 for that GeForce 2 Ultra, and the GeForce 3 replacement from the same company was only $300 and something.
Oh, if only we could get cards for that price today. Although yeah. MSRP is trying to keep the cards down.
It's trying to. And of course, with the manufacturers battling the bots and the crypto people that are really trying to gobble up everything that's available. You know, we have queues, we have like special email codes that are being sent out, all to prevent the robots, or to slow them down, from gobbling up all of the cards. Although if you go to Best Buy and actually add something to your cart, that stock gets taken out of the system for like 20 minutes.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah.
If you can catch it in stock, that is.
Well, yes, of course. But I thought we could go back in time and really kind of start at the very beginning and look at the APIs that were used to develop games, which sparked the advancement in the GPUs to take advantage of those APIs and make games faster and more immersive and, spawn an entire generation beyond the console.
Well, I know consoles played a big part in a couple of steps, but I'm curious to see where you're going. So let's do it.
All right. Well, we have a list and we've done this offline. So,
so much research.
Yeah. In 1992, June 30th, to be exact, according to Wikipedia, OpenGL was released. And do you know why OpenGL was such a big deal?
Because it's open.
It is open.
And it's GL-like.
I think it's GL. I don't know what GL stands for. Maybe it's graphical language or something.
I think it is graphical language. And isn't 1992 when we officially split graphics rendering from the CPU to the external graphics card, right? The GeForce 256, maybe?
No, that was a bit later, I think.
Oh, I shot at it and I missed.
I know. 1992 was pretty much really the inception of computers when we had PCs, desktop PCs, and we started to see the rise of the workstation. And that was the graphics cards that had extra memory, and we were using them for drawing pictures. I mean, I did AutoCAD 10 and 12 back in the day that was all DOS-based.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
And we used OpenGL to accelerate the creation of those 2D and 3D objects on the computer. Otherwise, we're reliant on the CPU to go and process those bits. Well, we could use this API to accelerate it by, pipelining all this.
So 1992 seems like a long time ago, but that's where it started.
Yes, with OpenGL. Now, OpenGL was started in the workstation space for 3D rendering and drawings in CAD and whatnot. But that wasn't really where it stayed. So in 1995, we have 3DFX releasing the Voodoo and their version of OpenGL that they called Glide. And in a sense, it was basically taking the OpenGL concept, rebranding it and changing the name according to the Wikipedia to avoid copyright infringement. But in a sense, it did the exact same thing. And you are familiar with 3DFX and the Voodoo, right?
Yeah, that was one of the first cards that we all kind of lusted after as the game started to advance.
And the reason being?
A dedicated video card, of course. So it was faster and prettier, which allowed your games to look so much more realistic. At least we thought so back in those days.
Well, they still are to a certain degree. But it was a graphics accelerator. It took the OpenGL and the Glide extensions and then accelerated them through dedicated processors. So they offloaded a lot of the graphics processing that would be slowed down by your CPU, pushes them through an interpreter so that they could be accelerated before you see them on the monitor.
Excellent. Eric, groundbreaking, one would say, in retrospect.
3DFX really drove the graphics market in terms of games and whatnot. We have, Quake, for instance. That was my first foray into 3DFX. If you had a Voodoo card, it would accelerate the game. It would allow you to run it in higher resolutions. And it added these nice glow effects and much richer textures.
And that kind of like ray tracing today.
Yes, exactly. And then we have Quake 2, which used the 3DFX extensions, but that was a more advanced game to the point where graphics cards from other manufacturers were accelerating OpenGL and not necessarily Glide. A few nuances and changes between the two, but for the most part, they did the exact same thing.
Impressive. I can't believe it's been that so long ago.
I know. It's only long when you think about it. But then again, yeah, it's nostalgia, right?
Right.
So we have 1996, and this is a key turning point in the gaming industry and also graphics cards. We have Doom 95, which was the original Doom and Doom 2, being ported to DirectX.
Now, I remember that because it was a huge, big push to get everybody on board with DirectX. And ID Software led the charge, John Carmack, and if I'm not mistaken, Greg Newell, right?
Yeah, that's what I read as well. Greg Newell, isn't he the Valve guy?
Yeah, now that's an interesting thing because this is really the origins of Valve, which today has become sort of the predominant software development. Greg Newell was the primary developer, or at least project lead, depending on who you ask, on porting Doom to DirectX, which was done for free so that Microsoft could get people to adapt the DirectX technology way back in 1996.
Yeah, so DirectX was a download that you could apply to Windows 95, and I think that was DirectX 2. We have several releases. Every several years, there would be a new release that would come out. And that was really what changed game development from OpenGL and Glide to the DirectX platform.
Well, yeah, because it shipped with Windows, so it was easy. Mm-hmm. And when you bought a video card, you just looked for the DirectX support right on the package. I remember how easy it was.
The next item I have on the timeline, which I will post in the show notes so you can follow along if you'd like,
right,
is in 1996, we have the 3D Rage from ATI. And the special thing about the 3D Rage is that it has history. It has some roots in the ATI space and also graphics acceleration. And it was one of the first instances where we have a graphics accelerator accelerating itself.
Oh, okay.
And we'll get to that a little bit later, but it has to do with the fact that we have more than one GPU on the same card.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Now, those were the days.
Speaking of more than one chip on the same card, in 1988, we have a couple of really big releases. We have the Riva TNT. And this was an OpenGL accelerator from NVIDIA. And we also have the Voodoo 2 from 3DFX. Now, out of those two cards, which one do you remember the most?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I remember trying to get Riva TNT cards and they were not easy to get.
No, they were very rare. And it wasn't until TNT 2, I have a TNT 2 Ultra actually.
Right.
That was my first foray into getting an NVIDIA card, was the TNT 2. It wasn't the original TNT or even the Riva 128.
Yeah, and I think it was one of those where you had to settle for a Voodoo 2 unless you could get really lucky and find a Riva TNT in the store, and they were always more expensive.
And in some cases, the Voodoo 2 was actually faster because we have games that are written for 3DFX with the Glide acceleration and whatnot, and the Voodoo 2 was a graphics accelerator that fit into a PCI slot, and you could run two of them.
Oh, yay. Now so that's the beginning of the dual GPU era right there in 1998.
Yeah, and that was SLI. Well, 3DFX SLI.
Right.
And which we'll get into a little bit later. Sadly, in 1998, we have the end of Glide games. And this was really kind of the beginning of the end for 3DFX as well. Game developers started to migrate toward doing just basic OpenGL or Direct3D. Because in 2000, 1215 to be exact, NVIDIA buys 3DFX.
Yeah, and that was pretty earth-shaking out there, especially because they had been competitors up to that point.
So NVIDIA made that purchase. 3DFX was in the process of building a brand new graphics card that had everything all in one chip. We had the Voodoo 3 and the Voodoo 5, which really weren't doing too well in the marketplace. But since the company had bought STB Systems, who was a partner building 3DFX cards, they were working together to build this massive GPU. Well, when NVIDIA purchased them, all of the IP that went into that initial card went into the NVIDIA FX GPUs.
Oh, groundbreaking.
So,
yes.
So in a sense, we have the continuation of 3DFX, but they really kill everything Glide related and really focused on supporting OpenGL, but making a transition to DirectX. All right, so the next item was also in 2000, and that's when Rage 6 was released. Well, really, it got rebranded the Rage name to Radeon.
So the origin of the Radeon video card as we know it is from the Rage 6 in 2000?
Yeah, and Radeon has lived since then, since 2000, when all throughout ATI's life and even when it got purchased by AMD. It's such a strong branding, and as you mentioned, you know, it's been around. We thought that Rage retired. Well, it really just got rebranded.
And I didn't realize that that was the origin behind it. The Rage 6 brand just seemed to vanish, and I felt like the Radeon was a whole new product line. So, yeah, again, their advertising worked great. You had to have the hot new thing.
Yeah, well, and in our previous podcast episode, we talked about the speed differences between PCI and AGP and how, as gamers back then, we would go and say, hey, well, upgrading our motherboard, we have AGP, we should get an AGP card. And we realized that if we looked at the specs, we weren't gaining much in terms of speed. All we had was a different graphics port in the way that it was interpreted. Well, during that time, we also had conflicts between game developers and the different DirectX versions. And the next item that I have is in 2001, and I'm bringing this up again, we have the GeForce 3 release.
Okay, so 2001, a big year. GeForce 3 is released, and why is that a big year? Because DirectX, right?
Well, yes, we have DirectX 8, and this was one of the first cards that supported all of the DirectX 8 features, and I like to bring it up because of my whole GeForce 2 Ultra debacle, but looking back, GeForce 2 Ultra only supported DirectX 7. If we look back at the games that were released during DirectX 7 era, there wasn't a lot that was really notable that couldn't run on a DirectX 8 card.
So really, although it was slower, you got the new technologies. Mm-hmm. So you can go back to the previous podcast, but I think what Dennis is saying is maybe in retrospect, the GeForce 3 was the better card.
I think it was.
So what's next for us?
The next item is another API that enhanced the immersion factor inside games. And one of the items that really slowed down any sort of a game was particle effects and any sort of physical interaction. So we have like a fire, we have waves, and all of that processing had to be performed by your CPU. And unless you had a really super top of the line CPU, and sometimes even if you had that, the game wasn't accelerated. It couldn't go any faster because the GPU only handled the graphic aspect of it. Well, we have AGEA in 2004 releases an API called PhysX.
Oh, yes. I remember PhysX because if you were running ATI cards, you couldn't use it initially. You had to buy an extra card, a physical PhysX processor.
That was actually happens a little bit later. When PhysX got released, it was a dedicated physical card. It was a separate PCI card that you ran in your system, and it was platform agnostic. So you could run it with an ATI card or an NVIDIA card, but the game had to support the AGEA.
I didn't realize that it was compatible with both because PhysX is really associated with NVIDIA, which I'm sure we're going to get to.
Yeah, and that comes a little bit later.
Okay, but initially, yeah, it was an external card, and you could run it with any video card.
Mm-hmm. And you had to have a game that supported it. And I want to say that Unreal Tournament 3 did, because I know every time you install it, it installs the AGEA driver. And then that allows you to have it accelerates the game by accelerating the particles. And it offloads the processing to a super fast dedicated processor.
Well, they picked a good horse to put it on because the Unreal Tournament, man, that was huge.
Yeah, that game engine was used everywhere. And really, the game engine almost dictated the performance. So we have the Unreal Engine, which powered so many games because of the way that they licensed it.
It still does.
And then we had a Crytek engine, which we will talk about a little bit later, but that drove Crysis. And it had its own graphics library and the way that it handled performance. And it's its own API that dealt with DirectX differently. And
so this started in 2004. So this really started with about the DirectX 8 generation.
Mm-hmm, it did. And then we have, in 2004, we also have NVIDIA SLI. And this was dear to my heart. I loved SLI, even though I would buy two cards, but then sometimes I wouldn't have time to play the games the way they needed to be played, or the games I wanted to play didn't support SLI very well. Early on, it was designed as a way to accelerate your graphics accelerator because the underlying hardware wasn't fast enough to take advantage of what was being produced in games at the time.
So I think this is really interesting because originally SLI did some interesting things. They did every other line drawing, top of the screen, bottom of the screen drawing. And isn't this where they first tried to do the 3D engines with the NVIDIA glasses where...
all of that stuff came out at around the same time. So with NVIDIA SLI, you had the old 3DFX SLI, which was alternate frame. So one frame would get rendered by one card and one frame would get rendered by another card. And they would just alternate back and forth, and that allowed you to double your output. NVIDIA SLI introduced the half frame. So it would say the top half would be rendered by one card, the bottom half would be rendered by another card. And then they also had alternate scan lines, which I don't think actually really worked very well, but it would intermingle the frame by parsing small bits of it by each card.
Well, they all sped everything up, though.
They sped it up a lot. And when NVIDIA SLI was released, it was billed as a way to take a cheap GPU and get more performance out of it. So you could buy your GeForce, what was it, the 6600 was the popular one, the right. Lowest end that you could get that single SLI finger on. And that was an inexpensive card. I think it was close to $200 or something.
Right.
You could buy one of those, and if you had the budget for it, in a couple of weeks or a month or whatever, you could buy another card, link them together, and double your performance. At two cards, you would literally double your performance.
Well, and we recommended that for years, right? Buy the biggest NVIDIA card you can afford, and then when you start to feel it a little bit, go out and buy a second one.
Well, and the idea is that the prices would come down.
Yeah, and so you get not quite double your performance, but much cheaper than buying what would be the hot new video card every generation.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, NVIDIA SLI, and we're jumping ahead here, but SLI changed from being a budget way of increasing performance to being kind of the enthusiast niche. It's like, well, enthusiasts buy two cards because what happened is people would buy the best cards you could, which was really the top of the line, and then sometimes wouldn't buy a second card, or they would buy another second card that was that top of the line. Nobody bought two of the low-end cards anymore. And NVIDIA responded to that by starting to remove SLI from those lower-end cards and really just focusing on the high-end.
Which I still think is a huge loss for the budget builders out there.
It was. And it was more or less it's a marketing thing. I mean, you think about it, boutique builders like CyberPower PC, when they're putting together a system that needs to be less than $1,000, they're not picking the top-of-the-line graphics card to put in there. They're picking a lower-end card. And the people that are buying these are on a budget, so they don't necessarily have the extra coin to go and put another card in. Otherwise, they would have bought the higher-end card to begin with. And I think that was really the largest purchaser was these OEMs and not necessarily the enthusiasts, because we knew better.
Well, the good news is during this time, there was a huge battle between ATI and NVIDIA. And then a year later, in 2005, ATI responded.
Yes, with ATI Crossfire. And that was with the X800 Radeon. And to be honest, I never followed ATI that closely. I do remember the 3D Rage and the 3D Rage Max, because that was the first card that had two GPUs on the same PCB. But after that, I was really, I was an NVIDIA fanboy, to be honest. So I followed a lot of what NVIDIA did. The GeForce 256 was an amazing card. I never actually bought, but I recommended to a bunch of people. I mentioned that I had the Riva TNT 2 Ultra, which was the high end of the TNTs. And then it was GeForce 2. I kind of skipped a couple of generations in there, but as a good upgrader at the time, you skip a generation. That's really the best way to extend your coin and to get the best performance.
Well, I have to say, I went back and forth between ATI and NVIDIA, and it was always a challenge of power and heat because the ATI cards were cheaper generally, but they required a larger power supply and they generated tons more heat. So they weren't so cost effective to own. And that's been true really for a long time, although lesser now with the modern cards finally.
Yeah, I still have some HD, I think it's 3850s. They were a single slot PCI Express card on a red PCB, which was pretty awesome. But they had one PCI Express power connector, the little six pin, but if you just had it idling, the card got so hot you couldn't actually touch it. And I'm like, that is just insane that these cards are running that hot way back then. And now we're complaining about, you know, half of that.
Oh, no kidding. Well, 2005 was a busy year though, because Crossfire, of course, came out to challenge NVIDIA and started the war between ATI and NVIDIA that largely exists even still today. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only major milestone.
No, we have the Xbox 360, and the 360 changed the face of games, I think for the worse, because we have Microsoft pushing their gaming console. The Xbox, the original Xbox, was hugely successful, but they suffered from the lack of games. You know, we have PlayStation and PlayStation 2. There was a plethora of games being released for console. And that was really how Xbox lost, because they didn't have the game titles to be able to be played. So what Microsoft did was, at the same time DirectX 9 was being released, the hot new API. Well, Microsoft gave game developers an incentive to build games for the platform first, and used the same API so that they could write the game for the console and then immediately port it to the PC.
Oh, now this is ringing a bell, because that's games for Windows and cross-platform play that didn't really work as well as we all thought it would.
Well, there wasn't a lot of cross-platform play, although it existed, but it was more or less a hindrance, because now we're locked into the Xbox 360 ecosystem and the hardware within that console. So it didn't matter what CPU you had, what GPU you had on the PC side, because the game would never run. It would run well. It actually ran extremely well, but you never got any graphic enhancement from having a PC.
Hardware locked really to the Xbox 360.
And it that was where we have the hardware ahead of the software. I think that's the phrase that you coined early on.
Yep. Hardware ahead of software for a couple of years at least. Mm-hmm. But that all changed in 2007.
We have the DirectX 10 release. And this was big, because Crysis was also really important. It was a DirectX 9 game, but it got ported to DirectX 10.
And it really became the flagship, right? Even today, people are still saying, will it run Crysis? And this really comes from the DirectX 10 builds, right? Because they wanted you to build a PC and they used Crysis as the benchmark, which ironically, we still use today in a lot of ways. If you built a machine and it didn't support DirectX 10 and it couldn't run Crysis, you didn't have a gaming PC. That was at least the common mantra.
Well, and that was stemming from the fact that we had this lull of games that didn't require a lot of hardware on the PC side. So this was really more or less the jab to get people to buy better hardware once again, just to play a game that you may not even want to play.
Right. Now, Crysis, of course, is beautiful and still today is really a measuring stick for a lot of things. And the more modern Crysis also echoes this, although it's no longer become the rallying cry for PC builders.
No, not so much. Now, in 2008, we have the line item, NVIDIA buys PhysX. Now, this kind of echoes what NVIDIA has been doing for many years now and in the past. It's like they buy this company that has this amazing tech and then roll it into their own products. Now, when NVIDIA bought PhysX, they took the entire API and rolled it into their CUDA system. And CUDA was the language of the GPU, basically. It was how you could code the GPU to go and do certain things. And is one reason why crypto runs so well on NVIDIA GPUs, is because it can be programmed.
I didn't make the connection. That's why we count CUDA cores.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So with the CUDA system, they basically took the PhysX API, rolled it into CUDA, and that is why you had to have that external card to run PhysX on an ATI system, but could run it natively on an NVIDIA system. And you could also take the NVIDIA GPU, if you had an old one, you put it down into another slot, and you dedicate that to be your PhysX processor.
Oh, that was an awesome time.
And it, what it did was it allowed you to get the most performance out of your one GPU that you paid a lot of money for, and then use your secondary GPU to accelerate your games even more. And of course, now the GPUs are so fast that PhysX doesn't have any sort of an impact at all.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we may be jumping ahead a little bit, but I think it's no surprise to anyone that in the modern GPU era, really hardware, again, is ahead of software. And so now they are, you know, pushing us to buy new hardware for things like DLSS and ray tracing and, you know, gorgeous eye candy that doesn't necessarily affect gameplay. In fact, a lot of serious players turn it off.
It's true. The one thing that DLSS and some of those things that NVIDIA has been bringing to the table, the one thing it does do is it accelerates the game. And you can turn it off certain ray tracing things and accelerate it even more. But anti-aliasing, which is what primarily DLSS is, anti-aliasing was a huge tax on any sort of a GPU. That's why a lot of gamers would turn off anti-aliasing and increase their frame rate by 20 or 30%. Well, with DLSS, not to be an NVIDIA fanboy again, but with that, it's using AI to go and analyze the scene and determine what needs to be anti-aliased and only do the selective bits to make it look good. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Well, I definitely like all the eye candy, sometimes at the extent of competitive gaming, but that's why you build an enthusiast PC, right?
Yeah, so you can play around with this stuff. Speaking of enthusiast cards, in 2008, we're going to toot our own horn here.
Huh?
Ninja Lane reviews the HD 3870 X2 dual GPU Vision Tech card using ATI technology.
Love it.
This was, believe it or not, was the first product that Darren reviewed for me on NinjaLane.com.
Oh, way back in 2008.
And it's also one of the last instances of an ATI card with two GPUs on one PCB, at least that I can remember. And it was all done to accelerate that aging GPU to modern standards.
Yeah, that was a great card, but it was a monster for sure. Could grill steaks on it.
Oh, yes. Well, it came with some amazing coolers. They were like some heat pipe, this round heat pipe ones with a big fan in the middle. Really efficient, but really super hot.
Well, we may have to drag that one back out again to do some more retro overclocking.
Huh? Oh, yeah, that would be fun. Well, you have a couple of footnotes in here. We have the dual GPU Rage Max. This was a 3D Rage card that had two GPUs on the same PCB. It was one of the first instances of two GPUs to accelerate your GPU processing.
Right.
We have much later the dual GPU 295 from NVIDIA.
Ah, I wanted one of those so bad.
Same here. Now, the interesting thing about the 295 is that it didn't physically have two GPUs on the same PCB. It had two PCBs that were sandwiched together, which is really weird, but it was their way of providing a dual GPU solution on a single card without having to actually design the single card.
Sure. Clever, but expensive, and they never really took off because of it.
Yeah. And this was one of the instances where we had four-way SLI versus quad SLI. So at around this time, you could link four NVIDIA GPUs together in four-way SLI, which was four cards. But if you had a 295, you could do quad SLI, which was two cards with four GPUs.
Yeah, so you didn't need as big a motherboard, and you could dream of maybe trying to do four-way SLI with eight processors.
Oh, yeah, that would have been awesome, actually. But
not so practical.
Well, and the thing with SLI is that you got the best performance out of two cards. Once you added more than two cards, you did still get a performance boost, but you started to have system level overhead. So instead of having twice the performance, you had a third of the performance. You had a fourth card, and in certain instances, it was a lot faster, but otherwise, it wasn't much faster.
Yeah, just too much complication, I think.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. We have two last line items before we wrap up here. We have in 2017, Crossfire was retired from ATI, and that was the removal of the fingers on the PCB in favor of DirectX 12 linking cards together across the PCI Express bus. There's plenty of bandwidth there, and instead of having a dedicated connection across the top, now it's done in software, and it doesn't require the same cards and requires the game or the piece of software to support linking the cards instead of at the hardware level.
Yeah, you don't see really anything labeled Crossfire for a long time. It was pretty dead by 2017.
That's true. And speaking of dead, and I'm really sad at this, in 2020, which was what we're going to call the official death of SLI from NVIDIA, and that is when the RTX 3000 series replaced the SL fingers with NVLink. But I'm going to challenge that, saying the RTX 2000 series was the start of that, because that's when NVLink was on the 2080 cards, and there was really no way to link them together except over that proprietary bus. And at that point, you couldn't enable SLI. It's mostly for professional style calculations.
Well, I think it's a little sad to see both Crossfire and SLI retired, but really modern GPUs are so much farther ahead than the software now. You don't really need to have two video cards unless you're trying to do something like bit mining. But for gaming, really, if you get a high-end card like a 3080 or 3070 or beyond, you're going to have so much hardware that games just haven't caught up again.
Well, and if we think about the way games were sold and played, we have basically the monitor resolution. So in the early days, it might be 640 by 480, and then it was 800 by 600. 1024 by 768. I'm going to be rattling off monitor sizes here,
sure.
But we have 1080p, which was really the line in the sand for many, many years, and that's HD for the most part. Could you play an HD game or could you not play an HD game? And that was what you strove to buy a video card for. Play my favorite game title at HD. Well, with modern GPUs, now it's like HD is the 640 by 480. It's all about 4K, because the hardware is so fast that it doesn't matter at 1080p anymore. The only way to tell the difference is at the higher resolutions, where you're actually pushing the hardware beyond what normal people would run it at.
Yeah, interestingly enough, that's put us in an era now where you have to match your video cards to your monitor, to your refresh rate, to your size, to really optimize your whole system. But I think that's a good step. It's just made things a little bit more complicated and a lot more expensive.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2021. Thanks for listening.
So I want to decode this GL like OpenGL. Was it an IDE card?
That's funny.
All right. But anyway, continuing on.
Hold on. Oh my gosh.